The true idealism, true transcendence, is not imbued in man from the soul. But this is what happens with this animal soul. It wants to be comfortable. It comes into this world. What is goodness? It wants good. It wants to be. What is goodness? At the surface, materialism, that's what counts. That is what's good. This world is defined as a world of shells. What does it mean, a world of shells? That what constitutes the perception of reality in our world is the shell dynamic of existence. So this soul naturally gravitates towards materialism, towards self-indulgence, towards self-absorption. So its drives are usually enclosed and manifested in those areas of materialism and physicality. And the more the person and the Nefesh HaBahamas encloses its drives, its energies in these forms, this is how it expresses itself, the more it's coerced, the more it's desensitized. And then ultimately, since the Nefesh HaBahamas is driven by an ego, so if a person's ego becomes really all-pervading, it can bring him to cheat, to lie, to deceive, to steal, and to degrade himself and his behavior from one level to a lower level to a lower level, until sometimes, unfortunately, to engage in the most immoral activities, as human beings have demonstrated to be capable of in the last 5,700 years of existence, unfortunately. But this is something that we have to understand, that the Nefesh HaBahamas is essentially not evil. There are two aspects to it. There is the character of the Nefesh HaBahamas, and there are its garments, in what it encloses and expresses itself. Its expressions often have to be eradicated. But its very self, its very identity, no, can actually be refined, reoriented, redirected. The Nefesh HaBahamas is a drive. It wants to be happy, it wants to be good. When you can explain to her what is true goodness, what is ultimate reality, what is truth, the Nefesh HaBahamas can actually reorient its drive into positive things, into holy things, to the extent that it could become an ally, a partner with the divine soul. It could begin identifying with the ambitions, with the drives, with the wants of the transcendental soul, and create and mold a total union between the two souls, and heaven and earth in man's personal life kiss. They connect. They bond into a seamless whole. Just to give an example for this concept, the Alter Rebbe explains this in detail in the Sefer Likutei Torah in Parshas Chukas concerning the Parah Aduma, the red cow, the red heifer. There's a mitzvah in the Torah that in order to purify an impure person who has been defiled by a corpse, there's a whole complicated process of the red cow which is involved. First and foremost, you have to take a Parah Aduma, a red cow, and that has to be burnt. Its ashes then have to be mixed with water, mayim chayim, live water, and sprinkled on the impure person, and that purifies him. I read lately in the newspapers there was a tumult about a Parah Aduma that was born in Kfar Hasidim near Haifa a while ago. But now a few weeks ago, a delegation of rabbis who went to check it out saw it's disqualified. Two black hairs have grown on the Parah Aduma, no more red heifer. But the Hasidim of this story are excited because the Parah Aduma is pregnant, so maybe its offspring will still be a Parah Aduma. Yeah.
Is each person's Nefesh HaBahamas a unique individual? Like one Nefesh HaBahamas is smarter and one is less, one is stronger, one is weaker. Is it unique as the individual himself?
Is each Nefesh HaBahamas individualistic, or are they all the same? There are those aspects in which they're identical, in which all Nefesh HaBahamas is identical, but no, every Nefesh HaBahamas is individualistic. Even Nefesh HaBahamas, yeah, very well. Some people like money, power, whatever it is.
So one person who's a Rashi could say, well, I had a very strong, powerful...
A person who's a Rasha can say, I have a very strong, powerful Nefesh HaBahamas. That's the story of our life. Yeah, so...
And the Tzaddik
is given a weak one. Okay. Well, you know the Amalekim?
No, my father did whatever he did with the Amalekim, but I don't want to get into the whole story. So what's the Shabbat? Barasi Yetzirah and Barasi at the Tavli.
One second. Let's not get over the issue over here. The Nefesh HaBahamas is a very interesting character.
The devil made me do it. I mean, what is this?
The devil made me do it.
I'm saying.
A person is the master of his own destiny, yeah, ultimately. Yeah. A person has energy to overcome, yeah.
Oh, okay.
If a person... The Torah teaches if a human being has a strong Nefesh HaBahamas, it's unfair, you know. Listen, if you have an employee, if you run a company and you have many employees, a logical, sane employer will not demand from an employee something he's incapable of doing. You can't demand from a person to work 22 hours straight without eating or drinking. There are some employers, maybe, that demand it, but either they're insane or some other problem they have. Right? So the same is true with the creator of all human beings. Hashem creates human beings, and he gives them a certain job, a certain mission. And they're simply incapable of doing it, because the Nefesh HaBahamas is too strong. Even concerning a human employer, we would say, is insane. Concerning the supreme employer, it's certainly not the case. So therefore the Torah teaches that yes, every human being has the challenge, has the conflict. Has the Nefesh HaBahamas. But nevertheless, every human being has also the energy and the capability that under all circumstances, they can tap in and access the deeper element of self, the Nefesh HaLikus, and make it the dominant factor in his life. Which doesn't mean that they can necessarily get rid of the Nefesh HaBahamas. That's the whole story of the Beinoni, which is the hero of the Tanya, because it's that ordinary person who, till the end of his or her life, never gets rid of that second soul, that second perspective. But in this parak, we're talking about the tzaddik. So let's continue a moment. Yeah.
In our modern society, we're taught in many different ways that biology is very important, and that we are our genes and all the things we were born with, that we are victims to our genes. What you're saying now is we're really free. It's a conflict between secular society and what you're saying.
That's a good question. We are taught today that man is ultimately enslaved. His personality and his behavior is enslaved to his genes, to his DNA, or to his experiences as a child, in the womb of his mother, in school, and so on and so forth. Environmental factors or more internal, natural factors, whether the genes factor and so on and so forth. In fact, in today's politically correct world, there are certain activities that many human beings engage in that from the Torah perspective are totally incorrect. But nevertheless, how can you blame it? This is what my genes are all about. Yeah. So this is who I am. You want I should be who you are? Or you want I should be who I am?
That's the homosexuals
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So it's all biology. 5, 5, 5. Chapter 5, yeah. Yeah, the Rambam and Hilchos Tshuva you're mentioning, chapter 5 addresses this question. But what he's saying is that they say the Rambam lived in the 12th century. But since the 12th century, we have learned perhaps a thing or two about life. And among those things, we learned that man ultimately is a biological creature. And just as you cannot call a shark evil or cruel, and call a dove so nice. That's who they are. It's instinctively who they are. So indeed, over here, there is a disagreement. The Torah teaches, yes, genes are certainly a factor. And man's parents and educators are certainly a factor. And man's environment is a factor. This is reality. A person is influenced by neighbors, by friends, by parents, by educators, and by who they very are, by their genes, by their physiological anatomy, and by their DNA. That is true. But ultimately, every human being has a deep part within himself which allows him to live a morally healthy life. He is not enslaved or confined. He might have a conflict, he might have a challenge. But ultimately a human being has an energy within himself that's called the Koyach HaBchira, the faculty of free choice, which allows him to go beyond his environmental or sometimes even physiological experience, and it does not force him to live an unhealthy, immoral life. Especially according and in light of what the Tanya explains, that every human being has a nefesh halikis. So despite whatever one has done or not done, or despite whatever one has been taught or has been influenced, there is within them a real sense of truth, godliness and holiness and spirituality that no one can ever abuse or take away. An inner child, if you will, in modern slang. And back to the Parah Adumah issue. What happens by the Parah Adumah? You take a cow and you burn it. So Alter Rebbe Lekutei Torah explains the spiritual dynamic of what's going on there. The Parah Adumah is burnt. When it's burnt, it turns into ashes. So he gives an example of a piece of wood which is burnt. What happens to the piece of wood? Every physical thing is composite of four elements. Eish, Ruach, Mayim, for fire, air, water, and earth. When you burn it, the Alter Rebbe says, the fire part of it ascends with the fire. The ear element of it ascends with the smoke. The water element also ascends with the smoke, and smoke does a certain wetness, moisture. And what happens to the earth element? It remains, the ashes are the earth element. Hakil hayiminah, for the pasuk says, everything comes from the earth. Ultimately, the core of existence, of every creature is earth. So when the Parah Adumah is burnt, what remains? What remains is the essence of its existence. All the other forms and elements of his existence have been removed from it. He defines these two aspects as chaymer and surah, the substance and the form of the substance. The ultimate substance of everything is afar, earth. That's the chaymer. The tsura are the different forms that are ultimately additions to the very substance. So the para is stripped from all its forms, from all its additional stratums of expression and forms of life, and it's stripped back to its essence, to its quintessence, to its core, which is afar. That's the experience of paradum. So this mirrors and reflects the spiritual and psychological aspect of man's life. The nefesh habahamis, the animalistic soul, is defined as the para, as an animal, as the cow. Parah Adumah. Burning the Parah Adumah is what the ultimate complete tzaddik achieves. Why? The nefesh habahamis also has its chaymer and its tzura. It has its essential substance, and then it has the different forms through which are additions ultimately to its essential character. The essential substance of the nefesh habahamis, its koyach hamis'ava, as it's called in the Likutei Torah, is a drive to exist. It's a drive to be happy, to be comfortable. How is that achieved? So the nefesh habahamis engages in certain thoughts, in certain words, in certain activities, mundane activities, physical activities, devoid from any ultimate godly transcendental purpose. But these are not the very substance of the nefesh habahamis. These are the tzuris of the nefesh habahamis. These are garments which encase the nefesh habahamis. We usually don't distinguish between them because they become so identified with each other that they actually become like one and the same thing. But really, the very nefesh habahamis is not bad. So what has to be done? The same thing that we do with the Parah Adumah. It has to be burnt. You have to take the fire, water, and ear and send it away. And what are you left with? You're left with the earth, the afer, the afer. This can ultimately be used as a force to purify someone. This can be converted into holiness, become an ally of the divine soul. Just to give an example, which we can relate to on a day-to-day basis, We'll give the example that's brought in Chassidus about the difference between the teenager character and the adult character, or the elderly human being character. Today we all know about the gap of generations. What happens? You have the 65-year-old grandfather and the 17-year-old teenager. The 17-year-old teenager is uninhibited, has no limits, is not interested in treading the path that his grandfather wants him to tread. He's interested in enjoying life. Okay, so the two people do not get along. They don't get along ideologically, and practically they don't get along. The 65-year-old grandfather has a routine, an exact schedule. He wakes up every morning at 7:05, listens to CBS, goes, showers, eats his Tropicana and egg, has his appointments, goes to work, and I'm a chaya. And everything is on the dot. He doesn't go to sleep later than 11:44 p.m. And that's it. Fine. And he wants his grandson to do the same. His grandson doesn't work like that. One day he wakes up 2 in the afternoon. Another day 4 in the afternoon. When you're lucky, he wakes up 7 in the morning. And then comes with the moods. His grandfather, no such thing as moods. Every day you do the same thing. Teenager, it's not like that. 2 weeks he's depressed. He doesn't want to see anyone. He's locked up in his room reading or thinking. Other 2 weeks he's happy. The next 2 weeks he's very happy. The next 2 weeks he's very depressed. And so go create a bond between these. So the 65-year-old grandfather tells him, listen, you're Meshuggah, I was also like you. You'll grow out of it. You'll become like me. The teenager says, you're like a museum. You're like a museum display. There's no life by you. There's no vitality. So where is the communication? So very often, educators, and in our society itself, which is what produced the whole 60s syndrome, make a mistake. And that mistake is that the energy of this 17-year-old has to be banned, has to be abnegated, has to be subjugated, has to be forced, disciplined, to live a life which is fine, which is normal, so to speak, which is organized, without these uninhibited outbursts of experience. And then everything will be worked out. That, the Alter Rebbe teaches, Chassidus teaches, is wrong. It's a very wrong approach. We have to distinguish between the energy and where the energy is expressing itself. The energy of the young adult is the greatest blessing that our world has. It's pure. It's alive. It's lebedic. It's not dead. Once a person gets old, they already become disillusioned with life. They don't believe in anything. They're not interested in idealism anymore. So they succumb to the routine. A young person has a fire burning in his soul. He doesn't want to conform. What is the essence of this, of all these moods and uninhibited activities, is not negative. It's a very powerful drive not to be confined by the shackles of our physical existence. It comes from a deep place in man. It comes sometimes even from the divine soul, very often from the divine soul, that seeks transcendence, that wants to suck the marrow out of life. So instead of his Zayde coming to him and say, you're an idiot, I was also like you, forget about your dreams, his Zayde should show him how he could take that energy and instead of utilizing it for hollow, devoid things, he should utilize it for constructive things. Take it to make a good revolution in the world. To bring in real idealism into the world. So the energy is good, it just has to be reoriented. But we, sometimes, we throw away the good with the bad. We don't know how to distinguish between them. Look what he's doing. He stays up all night and does all the disgusting things. So what do you do with that? So you dismiss it. No. This is the difference between the essence of the Parah Adumah and the different elements that are added to the Parah Adumah. The essence of the Parah Adumah is a drive. It's a positive drive. Then, when it doesn't have where to express itself, it doesn't know how to express itself, it doesn't know of anything better, so it's involved, the Nefesh HaBahamas becomes involved in things which are antithetical to goodness, which are in contrast to holiness, to spirituality, to godliness. Right? But essentially, the drive can be redirected, reoriented. So that's what the Parah Aduma is. And this is also the story of man's Nefesh HaBahamas. We have two souls. One soul is transcendental. One soul is very self-oriented. The solution to create harmony is not to destroy one soul, to totally eradicate it. Rather, it's to distinguish between its essence and between its garments, its unclean garments. The unclean garments have to be removed. They cannot be rectified. You can't say, my Nefesh HaBahamas yesterday drove me in a direction that I lied, so I'm going to elevate that lie. You can't. That taka has to be dismissed. That has to be abnegated. That has to be nullified. Besides, in the case of the Baal Tshuva, the Alter Rebbe said in chapter 7, where sins can be transformed into positive deeds. But that's a separate issue. Generally, that has to be removed from the Nefesh HaBahamas. But then, once that happens, once man creates a dichotomy, a schism, between the essence of the Nefesh HaBahamas and all of its expressions, everything it's involved in, it removes the Nefesh HaBahamas from all the layers and layers and layers that have gathered on top of it. And that's not easy to create that disconnection. Then the Nefesh HaBahamas itself is a pure force. It's waiting to be refined. It's waiting to be directed. And then the divine soul can come in and teach it and refine it and elevate it. And then it can join the divine soul in its ambitions, in its characteristics, as the Gemara says, "B'chol avav chebishnei tzerach," you should love Hashem with all your heart, with both of your inclinations. How could you love Hashem with both of your inclinations? The animal soul can also love Hashem. Why? If it realizes that godliness is the greatest thing in existence, it will love it with its full fervor and zealousness. Reb Hillel Parachar was a chassid of the Alter Rebbe and of his son, the Mittler Rebbe, of his grandson, the Tzemach Tzedek. He once said, if the Bali Taivis of our world, Bali Taivis means those people who are really, really involved in materialistic pleasures, and you know there are those people who know how to do it well. He says, if these Bali Taivis who love materialism from the depth of their heart, if they would know the geschmack, the delight that exists in godliness, they would abandon all of the materialistic pleasures and they would run towards godliness. I have a friend, he's a real Baal Taiva. He knows what it means, materialistic pleasures. So I once told him this word from Reb Hillel Parachar. So he said Reb Hillel didn't understand what materialistic pleasures is. If he would have understood what materialistic pleasures... So I said, I think that you don't understand what godly pleasure is. If you would understand... So he says, Eina Chanami, I don't understand what he's saying. He didn't know. Materialism has a very shallow power. Its power is its... instant gratification. It's like something which is bitter, that's sugar-coated. The code is very nice. It's very sugarly. But in depth, in essence, it's pretty hollow. It's devoid. Spirituality and godliness is something eternal. It's absolute. It's essential. Its existence is not based on its veneer. Its existence is not based on the ad in the newspaper. You have certain products that are lousy, but the PR is good, so everyone falls for it. Yeah, that's the difference. The PR for physicality is very good PR. It presents itself in a nice way. But when you buy the telephone, you see it's broken. It's a piece of schmata what you bought. Yeah, but that's how it is. Sometimes the commercials are so good, they entice us. In spirituality, it's the other way around. The PR of spirituality, let's face it, is pretty bad in this world. The Ruchnis doesn't present itself as such a good product. As such a good product. That's what Hashem made. This is the whole scheme He made. Yeah, Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, or Shiva of Teravadas, once said, everything that says in a newspaper is a lie. Even the date that was printed yesterday. That's how it is. That's the power of physicality. Physicality, its power is newspaper, it's the media, it's PR. Now, it's a power. I shouldn't speak. My father's a journalist. That's how I was supported all my life. But let's face it, it has a power. The Nefesh HaBahamas has a power. But its power is, the power is in its expression. And now I just want to conclude with one vart. When the Nefesh HaBahamas is transformed into holiness, is transformed into godliness, the love towards spirituality will be enhanced in a very significant way. Because there's a certain energy in the Nefesh HaBahamas that the Nefesh HaLakis doesn't have. So when the Nefesh HaLakis utilizes the Nefesh HaBahamas to assist it, when it becomes a partner to the Nefesh HaLakis, it's not just you have another partner. a whole new dimension is introduced into its spiritual character, into its spiritual life. Just as in the previous metaphor given, again, it's not an identical metaphor. I don't think by no means the teenager is to be identified with the Nefesh HaBahamis and the 65-year-old old man with the Nefesh HaLakis. Maybe it's the other way around. I don't know. But I'm just giving the idea. I want to convey their general idea. When you have the teenager's energy manifested in constructive things, it's much deeper and it's much more effective than the elderly man involved in these very things. Why? Because there is a certain purity. The very fact that it's uninhibited, the very fact that it's often animalistic, yes? So if it's not directed, it can be destructive. But if it's reoriented, if it's redirected, there's no greater blessing. Because there's a certain uninhibited dimension, a certain simplicity, a certain unlimitedness, a certain infinity of youth that's now introduced into something which is constructive and godly. That's why not only is it a terrible mistake to tell the 17-year-old everything about you is ridiculous and crazy and babyishness, but we actually lose out something. Because the young people of our world are capable of introducing a positive energy that's infinitely greater than the energy of the elderly person. It's just in our primitiveness and in our closed-mindedness, we do not appreciate what is going on over here. We throw out the whole cow because of the dirty garments. So we don't appreciate what's going on. But if you can take that energy and reorient it, gewalt, you have such power here, such zealousness here. The Rebbe once said that teenagers are like a fire. You know what a fire is all about? If a fire is uncontrolled, it can destroy homes, cities, and people. But when you have a fire under control, burning in a fireplace, is there anything more warm, more beautiful, more poetic, more soul-invoking than a beautiful flame, people sitting around the flame and singing melodies? There's nothing greater than it. That's what a teenager is about. If the fire is uncontrolled, yes, it can consume, it can be destructive. But if the fire is controlled, in other words, if it's given focus, so this thing is the most beautiful thing. So when the Ra of the Nefesh HaBahamis, when the Nefesh HaBahamis is transformed into good, it's not just the Nefesh HaLakis has now another partner. The Nefesh HaBahamis has a certain animalistic side to it. There's a certain uninhibition about it. There's a certain simplicity about it. So now that energy becomes a colleague with the Nefesh HaLakis' energy. So there's a whole new dimension in the spiritual journey of the Nefesh HaLakis. There's a whole new infinite energy that's introduced into man's spiritual life by the Nefesh HaBahamis. So the Alter Rebbe is saying over here that when a tzaddik has managed to eradicate the evil from him, but he has not managed to transform the evil, what does that mean? He doesn't allow his Nefesh HaBahamis to express itself in any way. Not only in his garments, even in his character. He doesn't feel any more a drive in his heart towards things which are different than truth, holiness, and godliness. So there's no Nefesh HaBahamis in him. But he knows that it has not been transformed into good. That he feels he did not experience yet. So he might think that he accomplished stage one and not stage two. The Nefesh HaBahamis is totally out. It's just not transformed. The Alter Rebbe says no. This is called a tzaddik virale. It's a tzaddik who still has ra. There's still ra in him. He doesn't sense it because due to its minuteness, it's abnegated, it's subjugated. But the negativity still lingers there. Although he's non-conscious of it, he doesn't sense it, it's still there. And if it wouldn't have been there, then the ra would have been transformed into good. Because once the Nefesh HaBahamis is totally stripped from all its negative layers, it's ultimately transformed into good. The fact that it has not been transformed is a raya that it's still ra. In other words, that the essence of the Nefesh HaBahamis was not yet removed from its negative layers. There is still aspects of the Nefesh HaBahamis that are involved in its character in negativity. And therefore, he doesn't feel that his negativity was transformed totally into positivity. As the Alter Rebbe will explain in the continuation of this chapter. Have a good day and a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichel Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichel Menachem at 718-633-1076.